Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 4th, 2006. Our session today is entitled, What's My Spiritual Type? Spiritual Living. Our presenter is Elaine Olson. Session number OLEL2006-02. Let's listen in.
My name is Elaine Olson. I am the leader of this workshop on what is your type on some spirituality and spirituality kinds of things. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. I don't know if how many of you know each other, but could you take just a couple minutes to introduce yourself to people around you? If you know everybody around you, then that's okay. But if you try to find someone you don't know very well and just say your name, where you're from, just do a little bit of connecting. Hi, Paul. We're just getting started in introducing yourself to somebody you may not know. You know, I always get afraid of doing this at the beginning because I completely lose control.
Yeah. Clap your hands. Low whistle.
The text that I read this morning for morning matins talked about how we are all called beloved and how we are indeed precious in God's sight, and God knows us by our very name. And how important, I always like to begin a workshop at this way if I can, because how important it is to gather together, and at least one person here knows your name. Because as we live in community and the uniqueness of spirituality within a Christian community is that it's about people gathered. Even though there are moments when spirituality is about directly between God and me, it is also about my reaching out to those beside me. And we become little Christs to each other, as Luther would say. So to kind of know each other's name is a pretty important, maybe at least one other person's name is a pretty important thing. So this workshop is going to be a little bit about spirituality and what's my type. And I started my workshop at the end of last week. I will be doing two this week, but they kind of connect. But I want to begin by trying to find together what spirituality is. Okay? And in some of our traditions, it's kind of a new word, and it's not something that we're very familiar with, right? So when you hear the word spirituality, what do you think of? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
My relationship with God.
Your relationship with God, okay? What else comes to mind? Good.
Spiritual.
It really plays on the word spirit. Uh-huh. You know, it's how do we live in this spirit place, okay? What else comes to mind?
The health of your soul.
The health of your soul. That's interesting. All right, good. Okay. What else?
In the old days, to me, it meant anti-physicality.
So it wasn't.
And I didn't like the word for that reason.
Because it was anti kind of the concrete. Yeah. Okay. Huh. What else do you think?
Sometimes I think of Native American spirituality.
Okay.
It's almost like they have it and...
And we don't.
Amen.
Good. We have voices from above. That's great. Yeah, it's not anything that in my German Lutheran tradition and growing up in small town Nebraska would have been anything that I would have even thought about you know, spirituality was, this kind of transcendentalism, kind of whatever, you know, and it clearly was not of the Jesus I knew. But God has an amazing way of pouring water over my hard rock of a soul, and keeps forming me in yet amazing new ways. My living into this spirituality, this understanding of God as spirit, has been a true gift for me. And some of what I share in these workshops are things that helped me along the way. And I get excited about them, and so maybe they may help you just a little bit as well. One of the things that's interesting for me in God as spirit is let's take a little bit of the Trinity. All right, and we have God, creator. And one of the understandings that I have of God, creator, is as God made this world, God loved it and called it good and kept longing to get closer and closer with God's world. And the story of the Hebrew people in the Old Testament is ways in which God kept dwelling closer and closer. You know, as God promised that I am your God, you are my people, and you are made in my image. As the Israelites left Egypt, God dwelt among them as a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of smoke by night. You know, as God talked to Moses about the Ark of the Covenant, you know, they carried this ark in their midst to remind them God dwells here. All right. It's interesting in the story of Jesus, Emmanuel. God gets even so close that he becomes God with us. All right? God with us. It's like God with skin on. And in the story of Jesus, Jesus teaches us what this God story is all about. Let me tell you about the kingdom of God. Let me tell you about this realm of God. Jesus kept reminding the people over and over again, this is what it's going to look like. This is what it's about here. And then, it's almost like that wasn't enough yet either. Because as Jesus died and ascended, John does a particularly wonderful understanding of revealing that God was going to come even closer. Because God becomes the very spirit that dwells among us. And Jesus says, you will do even greater things than I. And so then, it's like with the gift of the Holy Spirit, as two or three gather in my name, there I am among them. It's a sense that spirituality becomes this very understanding that this dwelling of God is in our very midst and doesn't ever go away. So there's a sense for me that spirituality becomes the ways we live with God. And what we really understand is that in this created place that God made for us, there's this longing that we have to be connected to this greater, to this ultimate source of life and love and hope and goodness and beauty, right? And so in it we have this pull of the ways we live this with God, but we end up really finding out that it's the ways God lives with us. Because God becomes it. God becomes the very subject of it all. How does God live with us? And what we have to often do is take time to pay attention. It's always there. It's there. That's what grace is all about. It just kind of, it dwells among our midst. It's in this very earth that we live in. It's in the very life of the other. It's in the being of the love and life and goodness between us. Spirituality, then, is this kind of taking a minute and paying attention to what's already there. So it's the ways I live with God, and it's the way God lives with us, both and. All right? So when I talk about spirituality, that's what I mean. There's a sense that Native Americans, you know, you kind of, we laugh that said they have it and we don't. I think one of the interesting things about Native Americans is I think there was a sense of that as they, and I need to talk with them. This is one one little wondering, and it would be great to have more dialogue. But it's like, as they live close to the earth, there's a little more intention of how they name it. The stories of Scripture aren't so much about moralism as they are about stories of spirit. They're about how God is among us. When we live life abundantly, it may not necessarily be that I'll have abundant riches, but it's about abundant life in God, in spirit. I don't know what that will look like for us. So it isn't so much the kind of materialistic thing as it is this kind of abundance of this divine in which we dwell. Well, recognizing then that if that's what spirituality is, okay, and it's the way God lives with us, the question that this workshop is going to wonder about is, what does that look like for you? Actually, I'm going to say for me, because what does it look like for me? How do I do that? Because how it looks for me is going to be different than how it looks for you. And what often happens in our traditions, and it happens individually, but it also happens within our churches, and it happens within our religious traditions, is we go, this is the way I understand how God dwells with me and how I live with God and God lives with me. And I got the answer, and I'm going to make sure you know my answer. Right? You know, how often do you know? And I know the way, and I am the truth and the way. And he who comes to God my way is the legitimate thing. But perhaps God is even bigger than that. Perhaps God is even bigger than that. So that's what I want to explore a little bit. So I have a handout. I'm an elementary teacher from years ago, but I didn't bring colors, so you don't have to color. All right. I'm going to draw this on the board just because I'm a very visual person, and I need the concrete. All right. Imagine, if you will. Oh, we got the drummers drumming outside the door, but that's right. Oh, there they are. We'll shut the door. That's okay. If we were Eastern thinking, we may have more than this dualities that look on this thing, but this is what we have to, this is one tool. In our Western thinking, we often have this conversation between my head or my mind and my heart, right? And some of us know how to speak from our heart very, very well. And those of us who speak from our heads look at people who speak from their hearts and go, I don't get it. And those of us who live and speak from our hearts sometimes, you know, that's just too logical, you know. And so it isn't that one is right or one is wrong, they're just different. And how do we teach each other about the goodness of both of those? Sometimes in this understanding of spirituality, if I'm someone who really has this natural comfort zone and working out of this kind of putting pieces together in my mind, then of course that's going to be where God is most known to me. I mean, it's just the way I was created, you know? It's like fish know about the world by swimming in water. You throw me in water and, you know, I'm not going to live there very long, all right? Now, that doesn't mean that fish are wrong and I'm right. It just means they have the adaptation to swim in water. People who know God and have this sense of the divine through how they think and how they use their brain would work primarily here. All right? But there, God also has created us so that many of us know and have truth revealed to us, be it big truth or little truth, or we had talked about that one day, through our heart. And my heart is not only how I feel, emotion, okay, but it's also what I value. I make sense of life about those things that, and my intuit, you know, what's it those things that I base my understanding of the world on, even though it may not be logically sound, but according to my value, this is what it's about. Most of the time, conflict, as we get in conflict with our churches or with whatever, it usually is gridlock that happens in this lack of understanding of either I'm sorting information through my brain or I'm sorting information through my heart or my values. And so gridlock happens when I try to make you reflect the world through my primary modality. And so we get caught in gridlock because it's like my value is different than you. And so we have to create a whole new understanding. So it isn't that I can change that necessarily. You know, if I'm sitting here and I'm working out of my head and you're working out of your heart and I'm trying to convince you logically, we're going to hit gridlock. But somehow or other, I have to recognize that that's a different language. And if we're going to be in conversation together, I always pick on the person sitting right here. So
that's okay.
Somehow or other in this typing, I have to realize that if we're going to hear each other, I have to recognize their language is significant. And I have to know my language is significant. And how do we learn to speak each other's language? In spirituality, there's a language of the mind and there's a language of the heart. And some of us are primarily work in one or the other. Some of us can do both pretty well, be bilingual, right? So along with that, then, is not only this, how do we know the ways of God? How does God know us? But there's two old Greek words that are also pretty interesting words. One is kata, attic, and the other is Now just think, you're going to get to go down off this mountain and you can walk up to your neighbors and say, those flowers are, God has revealed there in a cataphatic way. Oh. And they'll go, where have you been? All right. What have you been smoking at Holden? I don't know. But anyway, let me tell you what this is about. This is clearly this kind of living in these divine stories, and I can use my mind or my mind or my heart here, but is God most revealed to me in the kind of visual or the concrete or the things that I see, the way I use my senses? That would be cataphatic. It's God in the revealed. It's kind of those things that I see and I know and I touched. In our world, in this age that we've been in, a Western world of modernity, of the modern world, is very much a cataphatic world. Because the modern world is very much a world where if I just have enough, money, if I have enough knowledge, if I have enough people, if I have enough wisdom, if I have enough information, if I have enough medicine, if I have enough whatever, life will work. That's cataphatic, all right? Life will work. What we're discovering right now is that life isn't working. Postmodern is a recognition that even when all that happens, life still doesn't work, all right? Which then is why, in some ways, there's a movement these days into recognizing again the truth of the apathetic, which is actually kind of if this is the negative, it's what's colored in. If this is the positive of what's colored in, this is the negative. It's the letting go. It's the beyond concrete. It's the mysteries of nothing. The mysteries beyond the concrete. So maybe it's not nothing in terms of, but it's nothing, it's no thing in terms of what's revealed. It's the mysteries of whatever is beyond. So then as I, have I lost you? All right. It's in our Western culture, this is probably the one that is harder for many of us. Because it doesn't fit that modern brain kind of thing. But it's living in the kind of mysteries, in the contemplative of something even beyond what makes sense to me. What happens in our types of spirituality and our types of religiosity is that we live in the cobwebs in here, somewhere. And what I would like to spend time in this morning is trying to figure out what are those quadrants for you. And in fact, I have a little bit of, I have a handy dandy little questionnaire that I'll give you after we leave. You know, I'm not going to take time to do it. Some of you would go, oh goody, a questionnaire. Others of you would go, oh no, not a questionnaire. But anyway, if you're interested, you can take one with you to find out what your type is. But let's just tell some stories and wonder. I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to start here. Just because it's so different than what most of our Western world is all about. All right? In some ways, this would be the spirituality of an inner life. And this would be the place where people go for... quiet and contemplation. It's a place of intuition and feeling. Notice how intuition is different than, you know, and I know it in my brain. You know, intuition is I just sense it. There's something in my being that figures it out. This kind of spirituality with those people that really like take quiet prayer and contemplation. Is there anybody there in this room that kind of gets contemplation and really likes taking time for contemplation? All right. Can you just, what's that? What is contemplation? How would you describe it?
One of the things that I would put an example of that for me would be I do like to attend Quaker services.
Ah, okay.
And to kind of sit in that silence, and there's kind of two sides of it for me. There's the one side where I'm letting kind of my brain and my heart lead me in a direction, questions I have, and sitting with God and thinking about them, but I'm kind of at least starting the direction. And then the other side of it, which I believe is a little more true to the Quaker tradition, is to sit in silence and think of nothing, and to let the start of the questioning or the answering or the contemplation come from God. And so I tend to usually do the first, but I like to challenge myself to do the latter.
Yeah. It's that, isn't that interesting? Revelation comes from nothing. And I'm going to break nothing apart. Revelation comes from no thing. No thing. Now, to imagine doing that is really hard. How do I clear my mind? How does that happen? It's really, yes?
Would this be the area in which, for instance, a Buddhist?
This could be very Buddhist, absolutely.
Philosophically in this realm?
Yes, absolutely. It's taking this time for meditation to let go of everything that is, and then to find what really is. Yeah. Anthony DeMello is another spiritual writer who writes a lot from this tradition. He talks a lot about letting go. Yes?
The Power of Now, which is on the bestseller list by Eckhart Tolle.
Yes.
Tolle is very much what that is.
Yeah, it is. It's real important to understand, please, that this is not alien to Christianity at all. It's very much part of Christianity. Imagine in the scriptures it says, Jesus went alone to pray. I wonder how much of Jesus' story was where Jesus got the power to be prophetic as Jesus was an amazing amount of time sitting in the nothing for God, the mysteries of God to be revealed. Okay? It's a wondering. It's really a wondering about that. Our Buddhist sisters and brothers can teach us a little bit about that meditative place, about how is God revealed here? Yeah. There's a real acceptance of spiritual practice can be solitude, fasting, simplicity, spiritual direction. Those are the things that can kind of happen in that. It's also about, this is very interesting. Not only is it about silence, but it's also about not using words. It can be a real place of music and dance. That is also a part of apathetic in the mysteries. And touch. It's non-word. It's non-word. That is also apathetic. We're really moving in a time in our age when people are really tired of being busy. I was speaking with a woman last week, and she said she's going to start what she has a lovely farm with flowers and put in a labyrinth. And she's going to start what she calls Silent Saturdays, where people come and spend get away from the busyness of noise and just sit in quiet. Have any of you been on a silent retreat? Yeah. What's it like for you? It is hard, yeah. It's very hard.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. We're so used to talking, it's hard not to talk. I was on a silent retreat with 5 people for 5 days. And it was so amazing because we would gather every morning for Lectio. And so the leader would read a prayer. And that would be the only spoken word. We would gather at mealtime and say nothing. Music would be in the background so we wouldn't hear each other crunch over the cereal. I would get so self-conscious about my eating. Because, you know, you'd hear every slurp. We spoke as we began and shared with each other what prayerful things we were working with. And then we spoke with each other at the end of the 5 days about what had been revealed. And it was an amazing experience for me of how it built community and not a word was spoken. Because I had a sense, there was a sense that as we heard each other at the beginning, and as we sat with each other, you carried them in your heart. You ate with them, and it was interesting that as we ended the retreat, where our process wove in and through each other through the 5 days, and how as I meet them afterwards, what a close experience I have in knowing them. And it was all out of apathetic. It's just really an amazing thing. All right. So, you may wonder, is that me? I don't know if it is you or not. I'm gonna go across the way to the whole other quadrant. Well, first of all, any questions about this? All right. This can be a real, if it's pushed to an extreme, it can really be a negative of culture, and I leave culture completely in order to be close to God. I negate culture to get here, right? All right, here we're going to put my thinking and the revealed, so I'm making a shift completely in a whole different side of your being. I don't know if this is your type or not. But this is, if we were to think of this as a theology, if this is a theology of the inner life, this would be, or spirituality of the inner life, this would be a theology, this would be a spirituality of theological renewal. And that renewal would happen, not so much in the quietness of worship space, but one would be most comfortable here with really good sermons, significant Bible studies, and what I read and study. Small groups are really based on what I read and study. It becomes a real mental prayer that leads to insight. Okay? This thing is going to get me. All right. Mental prayer to insight. It's kind of what this class is. I'm using a lot of words. We're doing lots of things for insight. Spiritual transformation happens outside of me. If spiritual transformation happens internally in my internal life, here spiritual transformation happens outside of me. It happens in kind of not what we do, but faith in what God has done. Anybody confused yet? All right, this is really Augustinian. All right, there we go, and Pauline. If we read lots of Paul. All right, does that make sense to you?
Luther.
Luther. Here I stand. Yeah. Mary Luther. This is where we go to study. This is Lutheran seminaries. You know, this that very much that kind of discipline of study and revelation. It's less focused on myself than it is on the activities of God. There's little focus, very little focus, on personal piety, inner reflection, and the personal pursuit of moral righteousness. Faith is primarily and primal. It's the very basic thing. One looks to the cross. It's all about faith. Who lives here? Who can relate to this one? Yeah? I walk around in it. What's it like for you to be here?
The danger is that it could be too much of a head trip.
Yeah, okay.
Quite comfortable there.
Yeah, of course we would be. Yeah. What can get caught in saying, you're right, if one can get caught here in this whole excess, if you live clear out in this corner, you can live in this excess of quietism, all right, where I get, you know, completely away from culture and just go to God, all right? What can happen here if I get clear out over here, I can really get caught up in this rationalism. Just prove it with my head, you know? Just lay out the doctrine and I'll tell you what to believe. Oh. All right? You know, it's kind of, you know, if you kind of want to play the game, it's like my doctrine is pure, more pure than your doctrine is. All right? Mm-hmm. Here it's my inner life is better. You know, I'm closer to God in my inner life than you are. I'm being, you know, I'm pushing the character really far. However, in here is this beautiful, gifted, spiritual place of knowing God in the words, knowing God in the study, knowing God in the concrete. It's a beautiful journey. It's a wonderful place to be. And there's much that our sisters and brothers there can teach us. It's a profound journey of what do these texts teach us? What do they have to say? What is the Greek about? What is its history about? How does this form our future? What are our traditions? There's amazing gift in that, and we need those brothers and sisters in this journey in order to help us stay true and whole and balanced and integrated. Do you know somebody who this would be? Okay, good. All right, let's then down here to the cataphatic veil. If this is theology of inner life, this is a theology of theological renewal. This is really personal renewal. All right? It's personal renewal. It's really a place of, do you know God in your own heart? How is God revealed to you in a knowing way in your own heart? In our Western culture, there has been a really strong move into this truth. It's really been a growth in non-denominationalism. It's been a growth of kind of a personal religiosity rather than a communal one. It's a movement into music and singing and feeling good rather than sacrament. It's a movement from, if we're going to talk about glory and cross, it's much more a movement into the glory than it is to the cross. I know God and God helps me feel good. It's also a place of this powerful, magnificent, triumphal God. This God of eminence. If here we can say, my doctrine is better than yours, all right? Here we can go, my walk with God is closer than yours. I know God more personally in my heart. Now that, you know, I'm not saying that's the best way to make it look, but that's where we can get caught. There's a real sense of an outward expression of this revealedness of God in believers. Now they're in this pietism, all right? It is a pietism. But in the personal renewal, the pietism pushes you out also to renew society. Out of my personal knowing God, now it's going to be different than this, but out of this personal knowing God, it's how do I help the poor person? How do I provide shelter for the widow and the orphans? You know, how do I reform the alcoholic? You know, how do we fix those kind of social evils? What religious tradition would be here, do you think?
Southern Baptist.
Mm-hmm. Southern Baptist, okay. Yeah. How else would you describe it? It's a lot of where praise worship is taking us. Mm-hmm. Know the glory of God, and how do I feel? It's really feeling God in my heart. And I'm gonna wonder, in a world where we've been so numbed by such pain and things that are so overwhelming to us, that to have some place where we can feel is one reason why this is growing. At least I know my heart is alive with so much out here that's numbing me. My fear, my being overwhelmed with society, with not having answers. Does that make any sense? Can you relate to that at all? Okay. How many of you understand this, live in this, and this is an important kind of thing for you?
Can I mention, sure. I think we told you this morning, we go to a very small Episcopal church, and we do not have a priest every Sunday. And so there are a bunch of us who are what we call morning worship, morning prayer leaders.
Okay.
But the thing that first struck me when we began to go to the Episcopal church was I felt that there was a pietism there that I hadn't quite expected, and it was a reverence sort of, even in our small group, which is often smaller than this, there was this reverence and I don't know, I guess you call it piety of worship. Mm-hmm. And even though there are some traditions there that seem kind of, they do a little more processional and all that kind of thing in the larger churches. In ours, we don't have that kind of room. We're just a little room. But there's something about it that to me, and as I've grown to know these people, we do a lot of the theological renewal because we do a lot of studies together. So. But I still sense that pietism. And we vary from teachers to people who don't really accept a woman pastor very well.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's I don't know.
There's an interesting kind of, when you use the word reverence, that can also link over into here, with the reverence of the mysteries of the sacrament, which is different than, we have concrete things that reveal the mysteries. You know, and often this is kind of like, how do I feel it in my heart? And when I feel it in my heart, praise God, hallelujah. And there's a reverence there that's maybe a more expressed reverence. Yeah. Any other thoughts about that? Wondering. I think our U.S. church is spending a lot of time here these days. Would anybody else kind of wonder about that?
We spend a lot of time there.
I think our U.S. church, the Western culture of church, is moving. This is what's growing in our Western church. Yes.
I think that may be the path people, churches are taking to lead the young people. They go that way because they feel it'll grab the young people better.
Which is a curious thing, because for some it does, for some and not for others.
Right.
I mean, it's what's interesting in this is we make assumptions about what other people may want, and what's important is to say, I'm gonna wonder when I get to here. I'm gonna wonder if this spiritual life includes all of us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then how does our worship? How can we figure out how to walk in all four places? Yeah.
I've actually been doing some reading and research into. Not using this term spirituality, but types of worship that appeal to different generations. And the interesting thing is, I think churches are trying to do exactly that. But what I've been seeing, and the way that I and people who are my contemporaries seem to feel, is that, and what I've been reading in the research seems to say, that that's actually the research that appeals most to the baby boomers, and that the upper left-hand corner would probably appeal a lot more to my generation and those younger
people.
But it definitely over toward like the low end of the upper left quadrant.
But I do think it would also be an interesting comparison to make between those young people who have grown up in a church and have maybe come away from that and come back, or who who never went away from it, and those young people who did not grow up in a church background and how they come to it. Mm-hmm. Because I do kind of think that the latter would possibly be more attracted to the what we're talking about now, the praise type service and whatnot. But the people that we talk to who don't feel much in those services, even though they're supposed to be about this feeling, we're all predominantly people who have grown up a Lutheran, mm-hmm. and stayed in the church, have been active in ministry during college, and now that we're out in the working world, continue to express that faith. And we're not there. So I think that that's also an interesting comparison.
In this arena, it's really about a transformation of the believer. And how is my believing heart transformed? And maybe in the life of the church, we need some transformation of the believer. let's go up to here. We go to the apophatic mysteries and the thinking reality. What happens is a spirituality of not Elaine Olsen, but of social action. Isn't that interesting? A spirituality of social action. It's a spirituality of an outrage of the injustice that's happening in the world. And if this is about personal renewal, and getting individuals and people to change their heart. This would be about the transformation of the greater. This would be how do we help the poor. This is what is happening culturally that there are poor. And what am, and how does my lifestyle as how does my lifestyle as a person with many gifts affect those who are poor? And what do we need to change with the very system of the world and to have it be different? If this God is this mystery God, it's a sense of God is greater than all of this. And I join the mysteries of God to weave into this world to make the world be different. All right? It's a really sense of that it gets embedded. Isn't that an interesting word these days? It gets embedded by the authority of the divine. And it's the pure power of the gospel. This would be what is the word of the gospel. This would be what is the feeling of the gospel. This would be what is the indwelling of the gospel. This is what is the power of the gospel. Isn't that there's a sense at Martin Luther King Jr., Dorothy Day, those kind of things happen out of this tradition. One challenges the forces which victimize those who Christ claims. Okay? Isn't that a great, interesting word? Challenges the forces that victimize those who Christ claims. You seek to look at the problems from its root. You get very involved in the action. There's a high burnout rate here. Yes, sir. Oh. It's interesting. I've just been called to a ministry to work in a congregation that is very involved here. And they're getting tired. And what they're asking of me to help them do is to figure out how to build ministry here. And maybe a little bit here. But because of the high burnout. You know, where do we get ourselves centered back again? Maybe where we go to get centered back is in all the whole other three. Because see, the extreme of this is going to be moralism. Moralism, rationalism, the extreme is this extreme piety. What just fun little thought. What magazine would you buy?
Sojourner.
What magazine would you buy?
Christianity Today.
Yeah, right, yeah, good. What magazine would you buy?
Charismatic, whatever.
Yeah, you know, Portals of Prayer, those are kind of discipleship magazines. What magazines would you buy?
Weavings,
yeah. Weavings is a magazine. Another sense would be, these would be the zealots, all right? These would be the Sadducees. These would be the Pharisees. These would be the Essenes. Okay? Notice they're all needed. We need them all. There's not one that's better than the other. There's not one that's more important than the other. The fear is if we only live in one quadrant, we miss out on the greater God. Yeah.
So then overall, it's better to be a little bit of all? Is it possible to be heart and mind?
That's a great question. What I've discovered and in my reflecting is where do I most naturally enter? And in some of my, in my being, where do I most naturally walk in? you know, where I walk in this, you know, this in this room, where would I take my seat? All right? And then I begin, what about that as gift to me? Where does living in that spiritual place, God with me and me with God, where is it a profound gift to me? And what am I missing? I ask both questions. Because I'm going to miss something different in various times of my life. Because at various times of my life, I may need this, or I may need to go here, or I may need this, and I may need to find a friend who's going to help me there. And so it isn't a matter of what's right or wrong, or I need to change, but rather, where is it helping me and where is it keeping me stuck?
Stuck?
Stuck. Yeah, in other words, if I get caught here, and this is so home to me, and I live here all the time, it becomes this great gift of a kind of contemplation lifestyle that I'm going to come up to Holden and do quiet retreats my whole life.
Not quiet at
all. Yeah, I've got to think of a different place. A hermitage. A hermitage, okay? So that's why I'm going to ask the two-sided question. How is it a gift to me? And what else may God be calling me to next? Because God may be calling me into a different walk for a bit. You know, I've worn this jacket for a long time. Maybe it's time I try on a different one. I don't know what, you know. So it isn't that you have to. It's just as I listen and wonder about if this is the way God is living with me. And it shuts my door from understanding the greater God. You know, God's bigger than I ever could imagine. How else might God be relevant? Or not relevant? I don't know. Great question. Any other questions? Thoughts? Where, if what an understanding I've had of worship, and you're the worship expert, so I'm walking on a little bit of thin ice here, so you can bail me out if I get into it again. I'm going to wonder that if one understanding of worship is that it becomes the gathering of all of the ways, of all of the spiritualities that we live out in a variety of ways, that worship becomes the kind of integration of it all for all of us, right? Where in worship do we walk in each of these four quadrants? So that everyone who gathers can have a space where they go, oh, this is comfortable. All right. Because if I have one space where I'm comfortable, it's a little easier to kind of live in a space that's a little uncomfortable. So where does this happen? So that all the thoughts, the ways, quadrants have some place where God is revealed to them primarily. Wondering, where might it happen in the quiet, contemplative silence? Where might it happen in my own personal renewal, feeling and revealing God in a heart? Where might it happen in this intellectual feeding of my mind? And where might it happen where I'm asked to challenge the powers that be? I don't know. I don't know. It's just been putting you wondering. Yes?
Are you also saying that you'll never be able to satisfy everybody?
And actually saying that. But yet, I'm also wondering about when we get caught in all these head-on conflicts. You know, how do we work through gridlock? You know, one way of working through gridlock is to say, let's take a look at this. Is gridlock happening because this is what's comfortable for me? And this is what's comfortable for the person I'm in gridlock with? So how do they teach me and I teach them? Both and. Because we're broken open in new ways.
When I was at Holden a couple years ago, I ran into a woman who came here. She was an Episcopalian, and she came here specifically looking for this lower left quadrant type of spirituality. And she said she was disappointed with Holden because she did not find it. And we got to talking, and I said, you know what Holden needs is a hermitage.
Mm.
There's no reason why a little cabin couldn't be built somewhere up the line here. Mm-hmm. And you could bring food from the dining hall, and a person could really be quiet and contemplating and getting into some of this lower left stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting idea. Mm-hmm.
We had someone here back around early spring, I think it was, Jim Insley, who was a minister on retreat, on sabbatical here. He was here for about a month, and he spent one entire week being silent and functioning within the Holden community. Mm-hmm. So that the community didn't change per se. He was the one who put in a different way of operating. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting for him. He wrote an article for me. One of the things that he learned was that it's possible to do that, to be silent within a community at large. And of course, there were all kinds of adjustments. People would speak louder, and you know, people would do all of these various things to, because they felt the need to compensate for his silence. But it was a very interesting experience.
But here in the village, you can't find that. I mean, there's talk everywhere.
Yeah, the only way to be quiet around here is to get out of the village. Yeah, right.
You'd have to
at least out of the mainstream.
Yeah, interesting.
It's great talk, but I mean,
the conversation is in our value. Silence is not.
Yeah, it's interesting then that part of this spirituality is that as I started. The presence of the divine is always here. It's just what is our intention to notice the grace that abides. May that journey be an exciting one for you. As you wonder about where you start and wonder about where God is asking you to move just a little bit, may God's presence be with you in that journey.
I'm going to make a comment here. Anyway.
Yes, you may.
Somebody mentioned Native spirituality,
yes.
But it ended up, comment I was going to make is that a European will walk into the lake and see what the lake might be for people as they would envision boats and skiers and houses and houseboats, but a Native American will walk into the lake and wait for the lake to talk to it. And that's our Native spirituality.
Thank you.
Jordan, how do you look like a spirit up there?
You heard me.
We'll wait for the lake to tell us. If you're interested, and doing a survey to find out about your type. Here is it's directed, follow the directions. Again, I'm in the community for a week for a conversation. If you want some time with me one-on-one, there's a sign-up sheet, just put your initials and meet me in Chalet 4 at the time you signed up by. Or informal conversation. Blessing to you all on this sacred, wonderful, amazing journey we have. Of God's Spirit with us. Amen. Thank you.